Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium Miguel Network, and brought to you by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. We're coming to you guys Wednesday night, post-Gators midweek dub. How's everyone feeling? Will, I'll start with you.
Feeling great. Would have felt a lot better if LSU had finished off Kentucky. But as we pod here right now, Mike White is in a dogfight with the second worst team in the SEC, Ole Miss. The classic Mike White midweek game, let down on your home floor. So doing pretty good, though. Gators are rolling right now. That's always fun.
Yeah, tons of action for us. Dev and some others. I know it's been a long week, but how excited are you with the Gators kind of making the turn and 96-79 thrashing of Oklahoma on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we were all, most all of us were in the building that could be on Saturday going into the Tennessee game. Before the game, we kind of had the conversation, you know, the guards – don't have to live up to last year, but if Boogie and Xavier can just kind of not be below average, that the front court's been so dominant that this team can make a run. And then the last two games, Boogie Flans played at like an all SEC level all of a sudden, and we're just absolutely thrashing teams. I still think that you don't necessarily need the guards to play, you know, at a all SEC, all American level, just because of how good the front court's been. I mean, it's been talked about since the Oklahoma game ended. We outscored them 60-22 in the paint. Just an absolutely dominant front court performance. Ruben Chinyelu's having an all American SEC defensive player of the year kind of year so far. And the rest of the front court, you know, Condon, Houck, even Han Logden's played well since he got called out by the coach. It's just been phenomenal. They're starting to have that look about them, starting to do to teams a little bit of what last year's team did, starting to find that identity and what works best. And it's been a lot of fun to watch over the last week and a half.
Yeah, not only did Boogie Flan get a new cut, our boy Sam's rocking a new look. What are you seeing out of Boogie since he cut the hair?
Yeah, to say the least, I was inspired by the way he's performed since the haircut. Really great to see. You know, he cut his hair and has been significantly better at his job, if you say so. I thought maybe, hey, if I trim the beard, try the stash look, maybe I might be a little bit better at my job. Didn't quite translate today, but hey, we're on to tomorrow. Anyways, Boogie Flan, he's been playing awesome. Yeah, crazy. You know, cut the dreads and now he's hooping. The shots he was making against Tennessee were great, especially from beyond the arc. And that mid-range game for him has really developed, which it doesn't stink because like we know he's kind of had that the whole time. And like, we kind of wish he was pulling that mid game a little bit more in the non-conference, but he's been awesome the last two games creating offensively. You know what you're going to get with him defensively, not going to miss a beat there, but yeah, cut the dreads. And he's hooping to say the least.
It's a good thing nobody on this pod called for him to be benched in the last week and a half, right?
Yeah. Really good thing.
I don't think we would do that kind of thing on this here program. So just putting that out there.
Certainly not. We would definitely not deliver some premature takes online and have those almost immediately blow up in our faces. Cause that's just not the kind of, that's not the kind of podcast that we are. That's not what we aspire to be. We don't want to be reactionary or over emotional or anything like that. You can go to other podcasts to find that. Here, we're going to keep it straight and tell you exactly how it is.
And have patience, which some of this podcast tried to explain last week's Tennessee game. So credit the Breakfast with the Gators for having patience with Boogie Flan. And another remarkable thing about the Tennessee game is he had that spur. He didn't score, I don't think, until like 3 minutes left in the first half to get his first bucket. And then I think scored his next 23 in the next 13, 14 minutes of gameplay. So it was really just a spark from some calling for his benching to midway through the second half while he's at the free throw line, the entire crowd chanting his name. So just an awesome moment for Boogie. And for him to stack that game and go into Norman, I know it's I guess the students aren't back in Oklahoma. It's January 14th. But regardless, a lackluster crowd, it's easy one to kind of lull and have your mind back in Gainesville or looking ahead to a Vanderbilt game Saturday. And for him to stack games, I think he had 6 assists, multiple rebounds, 13 points, shot nearly 50% from the field. Just another incredible outing for him that really just elevates the Gators. And we found an identity offensively. Dev, you mentioned, what was it, 52-20 in the paint, 62-20?
60-22.
I mean, just that's what we've been kind of harping on. If this team is not going to be able to shoot the three ball well. I think we shot 27% again Wednesday night or Tuesday night in Norman. But 17 offensive rebounds just really dominated the glass and flexed our muscles down low.
It ended up being 27%, but it felt better in the game. I think we missed a few late that dropped that percentage back down. I want to say that we had like 21 attempted three-pointers with like 5 minutes left in the game, which is a lot better, more efficient number than what we've been doing, where it's just been heave up every open look you get. But going back to Boogie, I think that you saw that three go down in the first half, late in the first half, and it was like just you could see it on his face that it was just like he relaxed a little bit. And I don't think that he's pressed since then. You know, even the first shot he took against Oklahoma, he missed back iron, but it was confident. It was in rhythm. It looked like it was going in. It was a good shot. So if this is the Boogie Flan that we're going to get, the ceiling on this team is so high because Thomas Houck is awesome. Alex Condon, when he wants to be, is awesome when he's not making crazy passes or anything like that. Ruben Chinyelu, he's gotten so much better from last year to this year. He's unbelievable right now. The ceiling on this team is so high. Some poor one or two seed's going to look up and see the defending national champion Florida Gators as the 3 or 4 in their region, and they're going to be pissed because this is a team that's going to be so much better in 6 weeks, 7 weeks than they are right now or they were back when they played Duke and UConn and Arizona. So it's exciting. I'm excited.
Yeah, on Chin, like his development has been incredible. And he's a guy who tested the draft waters last year. And if I do recall, didn't Walt also kind of test the draft waters and then he pulled his name out? So I just think like one thing with Todd and just the player development is just incredible to watch, especially the guys that return from years. Like those guys could have gone pro. They came back and then like they're getting that much better. You know, I mentioned it, I think on the last show, like Chin couldn't make, had no kind of back-to-basket game offensively last year, and we still won the national championship. And this year, he is unbelievable, and he's making his free throws, and like he's just an absolute animal on the glass. So his development has been awesome to watch, and I would say he's our most like second most reliable option behind Tommy. Like you know what you're going to get out of Chin night in, night out, and you can count on that. Whereas like Devin kind of mentioned, obviously, we know Alex Condon can be that, but there is like that kind of roller coaster of it, of one night you're going to get this Alex Condon, and then the other night you might get the Alabama versus of last season Alex Condon. So we're still waiting for that to come out. And if we can get that, we need it.
Going back to the Dartmouth game, Sam, Chinyelu is 15 of 17 at the free throw line and went 5 for 5 Tuesday night in Norman.
That's better than I even imagined.
It is pretty crazy. I mean, Chinyelu, I don't know what he ended up, but there was about 5 minutes left in the game, and I tweeted that he had 17 and 12 when they showed the graphic. And it's just the quietest 17 and 12 ever because he just gets every rebound. He gets his little, you know, his dump. They dump the ball into him, and he just puts it over his left shoulder, a little right hook. He had the sweet runner, like Hakeem Olajuwon style, against Tennessee. But the other thing about Chin in that Tennessee game is that he really he kind of prevented Tennessee from getting up about 6 or 7 points because there was a time where I think Tommy had 0 points the first like 8 minutes. We weren't really getting much from Condon. Obviously, the guards were bricking everything. But it was really Chinyelu who was getting offensive boards, getting defensive boards, cleaning up the defensive glass. making it happen on the offensive end and really held it together until the guards started making shots. And that kind of happened in the Oklahoma game too. It was like both games, like once Boogie started making shots there in the half, then we sort of ran away with it. And once we get out in front of teams like that, we're just too good defensively for teams to keep up. Even when Oklahoma, I think in the second half, they shot like 75% or something ridiculous from three. And I think we ended up with a 19-point win with those kind of numbers, which is just inconceivable. So Chinyelu is just playing; he's just playing unbelievable. I think I don't know that he has the preseason name recognition to actually be an All-American like Tommy will, but I don't know that you could find another big across the country that you would take over him. Like, he reminds me of Oscar Tshiebwe the way he was playing a couple years ago at Kentucky, where it was just like he's going to get 15 to 20 points and he's going to get 12 to 15 rebounds and you're not going to be able to score over him. But back to Boogie, really happy for Boogie. I was pretty hard on Boogie. I was coaching him pretty tough, old school type of coaching. But you know, he responded, he cut the hair and then he started making some shots, and that was exactly what we wanted to see. And so, always true to my word, Boogie made back-to-back jump shots. He is now free to taunt the opponents after made layups whenever he wants, because he unlocked the taunting card with his back-to-back jump shots. So the Gators are rolling right now. It's pretty fun to see. Huge game Saturday against Vanderbilt. They're on right now with at Texas, so we'll see if they are looking a little too far ahead to our matchup, but I like the defending national champions to go up to Memorial Gym and somehow fix their shooting slump.
Go ahead, Dev.
I was going to say, it's easy to take for granted how well constructed this front court is. I mean, they're all back from last year's championship team, but just the development it's a credit to Carlin Hartman, because you look at it, you have your power rebounder, Ruben Chinyelu, who's developed the offensive game in addition to just being that reliable rebounder. He might be the best rebounder in the country. Then you have Alex Condon, who's a super skilled 6'11 guy that's going to hustle the floor, run the floor. He can pass really well. He's probably our best passing big. Then you have Tommy Hout, that's like playing the three, but it's also 6'10 and can get down low and makes all the hustle plays, all the winning plays, all the championship level plays. And then you off the bench, you have Micah Hanlogden, who's 7'1", that comes out and you know, sometimes he gets pushed around a little bit, but he's another just giant body. You just appreciate the different skill sets that these bigs have and how they're all meshing so well together. And when you don't have that elite guard play like we had all of last year, it really makes you appreciate how good those bigs are. And I think that's helped Boogie and helped Xavier to a lesser extent, but also helped him, helped Urban, helps all these other guys, makes their job so much easier having such an elite front court. So not going to have them together more than this year. So hopefully the rest of this way we can appreciate just how good and how well constructed this front court is.
Yeah. And yeah. I think we mentioned after the Georgia game, it might have been Golden that went on the post game show and talked about, you know, if we're out and running, no one's going to beat us. And it's pretty clear that's been our identity the last two games in the stretch of three straight quad one victories. I think we've averaged, I know we had 26 fast break points against Tennessee. We had 15 against Oklahoma on the road. I'm not too sure how many we had against Georgia. 35 against Georgia. So an astounding amount of fast break points in the last three matchups. I think Neil Blackman, part of Florida Basketball Hour on Saturday Down South, was on our show talking some hoops. And he mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, but Vanderbilt, despite them being 16-0, 17-0, whatever they are now, really aren't going to be able to handle our front court. And so I think that's going to be a huge advantage on Saturday, is get Boogie. We talked about him, how explosive, how quick he is, getting the ball down the court, making these passes, letting Kondo or Howell make the additional pass to another big man, or them finishing at the rim. But I think that's the identity this team needs to rely on right now. And the inability to shoot the outside shot, I think the last three games have really been kind of a nice change of pace offensively.
There's nobody in America that's going to be able to handle our front court, though. Duke couldn't handle our front court at home. I mean, this front court, the formula is so simple. Just have okay guard play. And this is a second weekend into the tournament. There's not a team in the country, I don't think, that we don't match up well with outside of Missouri the last 2 years. But there's not very many teams out there that we're going to play that you look across the court and say, oh, man, how are we going to guard that guy? So, go ahead, Will.
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of, just getting average guard play, we've gotten improved guard play out of Urban Klavzar. Three straight games with double figures, knocked down at least one three in all of them. Seems like, he's obviously on the smaller side, but it seems like he's sort of settling in, or the team has figured out, Todd's kind of figured out how to scheme around him defensively, because he's not really getting picked on as much as he was earlier in the season. Obviously, everybody remembers the play against Duke where – it was his man, and whether he over rotated a little bit or whatever, the guy made the shot right over him. But his emergence as a true backup guard has been huge, especially with Xavier Lee not really, he had a little spurt where he was playing better, but he's kind of fallen back to how he was at the beginning of the year. And it seemed like last night or the other night against Oklahoma, we really ran Boogie and Urban even more than Xavier. So it'll be interesting to see over the next couple weeks, over four or five games, if that trend holds and if Urban is kind of playing his way, maybe not necessarily into the starting lineup, but into like a six-man role as opposed to a bona fide, set back-end seven guy. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, well, I was actually going to bring that up. It's a good point. The Missouri game, Xavier Lee played 36 minutes, and he played 27, 21, and 19. So we're seeing him kind of lose those minutes while Urban played 10 against Missouri, 25, 28, and 27. And you've obviously seen the emergence offensively, not with just him, but our team scoring 90-plus in three straight contests now for a team that can't shoot the basketball too well. And I think it just spreads the floor out a little bit more. I think you kind of got to respect Urban as a shooter than Xavier with his shooting slumps right now. It's really brought in a whole new identity. I thought we talked about this during the game Tuesday, but the half-court offense in that first half against Oklahoma might have been the best 20 minutes of half-court offense we've had all year. So he's bringing something to this all. And it's tough because you want somebody like that in your starting role, but – kind of having that piece off the bench also changes the pace a little bit, which is kind of a tough battle Golden's got to deal with right now.
I'm going to hit the breaking news music. Georgia just lost at home on a buzzer beater to Ole Miss.
Classic Mike White losing that midweek game to an inferior opponent. Happens like clockwork two or three times a year, and that's why he was that's why he chose to leave as our coach.
97.
Very good.
97-95 Rebels.
Wow. You're telling me that easy non-con that he scheduled and got undefeated, all that hype has quickly disappeared through four league games?
That is correct. They will be falling out of the top 25. Interesting. The third week of January.
So that'll be a quad two win for the Gators, but that's okay. We got plenty more resume building wins on our schedule moving forward.
It won't matter when we're 15-3 in conference play.
Correct.
One more thing on Urban, just with his like kind of having a bigger role and having more minutes, taking some from Lee. Obviously, we've shot the ball a little bit better, but like in the early part of the season, like you didn't really think it was going to fall. But when he was shooting one, there was like, okay, this might actually go in. So I think his shot making, especially from beyond the arc, has value. And kind of like Will mentioned, we've been able to kind of scheme around maybe his defensive deficiencies. Which helps with having such a great front court like we have. So be interesting to see if it sticks, though, against Vanderbilt, as that's going to be a big test and kind of see what the workload is there for Lee. And I'm very curious to kind of see how maybe some of our miscues in our tough non-conference games can maybe translate to the Vanderbilt game and maybe some of those mini games like Neil mentioned when he was on.
Yeah, and during this stretch as well, I think a little bit, I know we've been searching for that eight man, and he's recorded double-digit minutes in the last four contests. A little bit more of a contributor against Georgia, not as big of a role against Tennessee and Oklahoma offensively. But Will, I'll just kick it to you. Isaiah Brown, I know we're looking for that man to just bring a little bit of consistency off the bench to, you know, in those little stretches where we're going to have Boogie Flan off the court.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me with Isaiah Brown is not necessarily the numbers. You know, like he had 4 points last night. I think he had four or five against Tennessee. He's kind of just putting that up. But he looks so much smoother than Xavien Lee. Like when Xavien has the ball, it's very clunky. It seems like we're kind of driving with no real hope. You know, maybe I can shoot a wacky wild layup off of 1 foot and try to spin it in or something. But I love the way that when Zay Brown has a lane, he takes it in and he's looking to dunk the thing. I think if he can hit down, knock down a couple shots, especially if he can make like two or three in a row sort of in spurts, then teams are really going to have to start respecting his jump shot, just like they've had to with Urban, and that's sort of opened things up. And so I think the biggest thing for him is just staying focused on defense, you know, boxing out when you're supposed to, remembering your assignments, switching the way that the coaches want you to, hedging, that sort of thing. And really just attacking the basket when you've got the opportunity, because if he keeps attacking the basket, they're going to have to respect it. And that's when we're going to be able to kick it to Tommy and kick it over to Boogie, who's a much better catch and shoot guy than he is off the dribble. And so I just, to me, it's like, it's, you know, maybe it doesn't line up analytically, but the eye test, he's passing with flying colors, even though it's only, you know, 10 minutes a game and his numbers aren't that gaudy.
Right. And you're not asking for him to go out there and be a world beater those 10 minutes, but just do your job. And it seems like that consistency factor that he's been maybe not lacking in games, but in practice, maybe that's getting a little better behind the scenes, and he's putting together some performances that
he's also making his free throws when he gets fouled. And just thinking, you know, long term, you're going to be in March and something's going to happen with foul trouble, or, you know, obviously as you get down to it, coaches will get more analytical and they might foul guys or take other guys out of the play. And so him just getting live game free throw reps, I think he'll continue to improve. And so I think that's an important thing to watch.
To that point, I mean, think about the national championship game last year, the very end against Houston. Yeah. It wasn't Will Richard. It wasn't Elijah Martin. It wasn't Walter Clayton taking those free throws. It was Denzel Aberdeen. So, I mean, just to your point about him being
prepared, made them both, right?
Ready to go, he did not. The best returning guard in the SEC did not make both of his free throws, unfortunately.
He unfortunately played well last night in the second half to lead the Cats back to a win over LSU. I was really hoping that we'd get a Kentucky loss to an 0-3 LSU team, and we just get another great quote from Mark Pope about how he wants to curl up in bed and die.
Well, it stuck out to me in early on in the Florida game, or in the game against Oklahoma, where Lee missed an assignment defensively, gave up a three, and Todd immediately called for Urban to get off the bench. And
not just gave up a three, fouled him too. 4 point.
Oh, yeah. He fouled him. Yeah, that's right. It was the quickest trigger I think in 4 years I've seen Todd Golden have. And one of the things I think that I'm looking for, at least, and this isn't based on any sort of real math or data that like what you would get from the Florida Basketball Hour guys, but it feels like you need about 5 3-pointers a game between Urban, Boogie, and Xavien Lee. And if you're getting that, you know, you might get your one every now and then from Condon. You might get a couple from Hauk. If you can get five from your three main guards, and then a bonus one from Brown every now and then, that feels like the sweet spot for us shooting wise. We're not going to be like last year where we're making 10, 11, 12, 13 threes in a game. But with how good the front court is, if you can get something from those guys, which we've gotten more than what we would bargain for the last two nights, but if that's what we're going to be going forward, then great. But that's kind of the key that I'm looking for, is if those guys can get five combined between the three of them.
Yeah, no, I think that 7-8 mark, knocking down threes in a game, is where we'll be pretty comfortable where we are, if we're getting that kind of production out of our shooters. Yeah. One guy
who actually, Dev, I'm gonna do you one more, and I'm gonna say if we can hit three threes by halftime, we're probably gonna win the game by 10 points at least.
We'll leave that up to you to track that the rest of the year. That'll be I mean,
I'm tracking everything else. You know, I'm dialed into all of Boogie Flan's jump shots to make sure he can taunt. I will say, you know, he has been playing great, but we've got to fix the end of half sets. And not to, you know, dunk on our national championship winning head coach or anything. But the end of half sets have left a lot to be desired for
back to back
four years.
The Walter Clayton play is not working quite as good this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, the halftime, the one right before the Oklahoma halftime where Boogie kind of just got stuck in the lane and then turned around for a fadeaway jumper like he was Dirk Nowitzki, that was pretty gross. And then the one against Tennessee where he just dribbled the ball until there were 4 seconds on the clock and we have the best offensive rebounding team maybe ever. And he jacked up a three feeling himself that, you know, shocker, he's still not shooting 55 or 60%. It's still around the 20s. It clanked and did not go in. But, you know, that's just nitpicking. The Gators are rolling, and I don't want to be too hard on the guy. But maybe I should, because the harder as I've gotten harder on him, he's played better. So
there's a guy we haven't seen in several weeks since the bye games, and I know he only played the last 2-3 minutes of last night. But the athleticism that just jumps off the screen or in person seeing C.J. Ingram, I know we're going to lose most of our front court next year. We'll need someone to slide in at three. But when's the last time you've seen someone like that athletic on our team? I know we Thomas Houck is uber athletic, got the high motor, makes winning plays.
Student of the game.
Student of the game, you know, first one in, last one out kind of guy. But that's something I kind of see in C.J. Ingram's kind of arsenal as well. Maybe not that type of degree to Thomas Houck right now. Certainly some development left in his game. But, man, I'm excited to see him once he gets kind of comfortable on the basketball court. I think his athleticism kind of just takes over maybe growing up. But once he gets acclimated to the college game and in Todd's system, I think that kid's going to be a superstar.
Yeah, it's a tough roster build for him to break into, I think, because I mean he's not a guard, so trying to break into that core four front court that we have right now, it's just the minutes aren't there the way that I'm sure he wanted them to be coming into this year.
I mean, but not a better four to learn from either. So this is a great learning opportunity, his first year in college basketball, get his feet wet. So
he also made a three against Oklahoma.
He did.
I think. That literally might be the first one he's made since the very first Arizona game when he drained that one and everybody thought he might be one and done for a second.
Yeah, the one against San Francis and Merrimack.
Okay. So hopefully he's getting a little confidence with the jump shot, because I think it's kind of interesting if we think long term for a second. Him and Alex Lloyd coming up next. With Urban there, we'll sort of have returning guards when we really haven't had that under Todd for the most part. And those guys were all transfers. I'm talking about like guys who
have been in the program, just
been developed or kind of like program
out of high school.
Guys. I guess Will Richards, you could say, but I'm saying more of like the front court. Like we found Condon, Chinyele was obviously a transfer in, but. Condon and Houck were kind of typical recruits that just sort of grew up and developed.
Okay, all right.
Into it.
I was just thinking Walt and Richard were multi-year starters.
Yeah. Todd is flipping the script. He's trying to develop guards this time, and he'll win a national championship doing that.
No, we're going to get the folks in the portal.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. Well, big news basketball-wise. Don't know if you guys saw. We've seen Coach Summerall go on some shows and talk about the transfer portal window, just the overall college schedule landscape right now and how common sense needs to prevail. It's not just hurting, it's hurting the kids. Also, it's hurting the institutions that are also that trying to play throughout the playoffs. We saw that with the Gators last year going through March and April. I don't know when the portal opened exactly last year, but we didn't hit the portal at all during our championship run, which we all think Golden Four, and we might be feeling that a little bit. And maybe a limited pool we had to select from once we won the title. But transfer portal now opens up after the national championship game, a 15-day window. So common sense has prevailed in college basketball, which is nice to see.
It's probably all a distraction, and I'm sure later this week or this month they're probably going to hit us with the expansion tweet that'll go out or something, and they'll be back to being their stupid selves.
Just wait until the lawsuit comes in, then that'll be altered again.
That lines up perfectly for the three-peat, though.
That's true. Good point.
It does. It does. I did say, you know, you guys have been critiquing all of my Boogie Flan takes that could have – they might not have even been wrong. They might have spurred him into playing well. I did say that Florida might be the one to buck the trend of by this certain date, every national champion of the last two decades has had X, Y, and Z profile. And all of a sudden, the Gators have learned to shoot the ball a little bit, and we look like a national champion contender squad. And whenever you add in the fact that Michigan lost and Purdue just struggled at home with Iowa, they ultimately pulled it out. But Iowa State got smacked the other night by Kansas.
UConn's gone into overtime in a late one against Seton Hall and Providence their last two outings. So, I mean, there's an opportunity for the Gators late in the season. And Will, one of them is the KenPom stat. I think it's week 6 AP rankings. I think it's the top 12 teams for the last 15 or 16 years have been in that little quadrant. Yeah.
There's three or four of them that get thrown out, and it seems like somebody finds a new one every single year. But it doesn't matter because
the Gators won the quadrants last year. So we were kind of hopeful. Yeah. But now we got to buck the trend.
Well, the Gators are here to break it. Yeah,
I think I saw earlier this week that it was top 5 offense and top 20 defense, I think, is the one they're going with now.
Yeah, but 3 years ago, it was top 15 or top 12 offense and top 12 defense.
Yeah.
And the funny part is that, you know, Houston never really has it's a little fugazi because Houston, when you watch them, they don't look that great offensively. But they are highly efficient, and Florida kind of last year bucked the trend slightly because we really weren't all that efficient offensively on our first baskets, but we rebounded the ball so well, and we got so many possessions that we ultimately had a, quote, high efficiency offense. And so, sometimes the numbers, they do lead you astray just a little bit.
We're kind of doing it again this year. I think I checked last night. I think we're 25th in KenPom offensive efficiency right now.
20th now, after last night.
20th. And I think we're just about dead last in three-point shooting this season. If not dead last, it's very close. So it's same sort of concept. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I'd imagine we're offensive rebounding better this year than we did last year to this point.
We are first in the country in offensive rebound, 17.5 boards a game. So
I'm looking at Bart Torovic's it's not your per game, but it's your offensive rebounding rate. So another little analytics tool. And we are in second, slightly, ever so slightly behind Tennessee, who we just dominated on the glass last Saturday, but ahead of, you know, Arizona. And on the defensive efficiency side, rebounding rate side, we're also we're in the top 3. So
it's scary for the rest of the country because this team's just starting to hit its stride.
Yeah.
And the analytics already kind of like them. Saturday's going to tell a lot.
Simple formula, you know. Give yourself multiple chances to score the ball on the offensive side and don't let your opponent have many chances on the defensive side, and so far it's working.
Yeah, I think Saturday's the game that we put the rest of the country back on notice. You know, we fall out of the top 25. Then we go on this little mini run we're on. Go and beat Vanderbilt on Saturday, like I think we all think we're going to. And the hype will be back behind Todd Golden's program again.
Big to build momentum too. If you can, you know, get that big signature win, and then the next kind of few games after are against maybe some more average conference opponents. Obviously, it's the SEC. You know, you never know what you're going to get on any given night, but some winnable games kind of lining up after to continue to stack the resume, build more momentum as you get into February, March, when you're playing those games against, you know, Kentucky. And yeah, it's exciting that it's kind of starting to come together after some of the frustrating woes that we had in non-conference play. But I think we all were kind of optimistic that it would eventually kind of come together, depending on if the guards can start making some shots. And that's starting to come with Boogie developing and, you know, just getting a haircut. Like, he could have probably just cut his haircut before Duke. Why not?
Sam, you're right, because so if we beat Vanderbilt on Saturday and then we get LSU at home, who obviously just gave Kentucky a run for their money, but it is now 0-4 in league play, and then we get Auburn at home, who is they've been very up and down, but it's not Bruce Pearl's Auburn, that's for sure. And so the Gators could be looking at 6-1, with the one loss being to a Missouri team that has, now that they're finally healthy, is playing some pretty good basketball.
I'd like to know what Todd Gordon's record is in SEC play after the first game, now that he's 0-4 in league openers.
Pretty good, I would say.
let me share some Todd Golden appreciation numbers. They said it during the Tennessee broadcast, but we didn't say it on the show. Florida has won 6 consecutive home games against ranked opponents. All 6 of those games we've won by more than 15 points. So there's number one. Number two, in the last 3 seasons, so this year, national championship, or last year and year 2 for Todd, Florida is 37-2 at home. And the 2 losses we have are by a combined 3 points.
Yeah.
37-2 in the O'Connell Center.
And that place was rocking on Saturday after we just dismantled a good Tennessee team. And I think we've mentioned this before, and we've talked about the lame duck that was on the sideline in the stadium behind Will. Just the fire and passion he brings to the crowd. The video of him pumping up Ruben Chinleyu after he gets fouled out, but puts together a dominating performance. You know, he's gator chomping to the crowd with 3 minutes left in the game. I mean, it's just so refreshing to see. And you know, I think, what is he, 40 years old now, but he acts like he's 14, you know, and he's just having a time with the college kids. He acts like one. And it's a lot of fun to see from a fan perspective of how engaged he is with all the other rowdy reptiles that, and the 10,000 folks in the O-Dome.
And then he made a point to point at you.
He did. That was a pretty cool moment. 20 on the walls and all the Coach top. Cole,
friend of the program.
Yeah, huge friend of the program.
And Jackson, the whole Golden family was sitting right behind him.
One of the other really things that I've grown to appreciate about Todd is that, you know, the Rick Barnes teams have – the Rick Barnes Tennessee teams have pretty much dominated the SEC for the last, I don't know how long he's been there, 10 years. And between last year and this year, Todd has just, and in the SEC tournament finals last year, Todd has just absolutely destroyed him. I mean, we're putting up 90 points on him with ease, shooting, you know, 20% from 3, whatever it is. And that's just totally unheard of for Rick Barnes teams that are so physical and so good defensively and all that. So it's just pretty impressive. I think I saw a stat that was the first time we've beaten a Tennessee team ranked back-to-back in the O-Dome since like 2018 or 2019 when they had Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams. And so it's really just nice to see Todd dominating our rivals.
Same with Nate Oates when it comes to guys.
Yeah, good point, though.
Yeah. I mean, he has Nate Oates' number. It doesn't matter if it's Tuscaloosa, Gainesville, or Nashville, wherever the SEC tournament is. I don't know exactly how many games in a row we've scored 100 on them, but it's at least 3.
it's what whoever he gets the opportunity to play, you know, play on a yearly basis or multiple times in a year, he's got their number. I mean, he sees the tendencies or the matchups that he can go attack, and his game plans going into those environments has just been spectacular. So shout out to the boys. 3 straight quad one wins. I know that I'll probably drop a Georgia losing to Ole Miss on Wednesday night, but regardless, Gators kind of back in the driver's seat, control their own destiny after an 0-1 start in league play. We got Vanderbilt on Saturday, I think at 2 o'clock tip in Memorial Gym, which is just always a weird place to play. But regardless, this is the time of the year. You know, you want to get hot in January, February, and translate that into March. So we'll keep stacking wins. But not only is hoops exciting, transfer portal ends by the time most of you guys listen to this, in the next 36 hours or so, the football portal officially closes. It's been a whirlwind since really November, I think 28th, 29th, when we played Florida State. Kind of that timeline, the last month and a half has been crazy. But big news, the Gators land Eric Singleton, Auburn transfer, formerly the Georgia Tech wide receiver that got to play in the Buster Faulkner offense. I don't know how many yards he put up, but he was the number one portal receiver last year. Goes to Auburn. We understand the struggles they had. Hugh Freeze is gone. Their quarterbacks are gone. Brand new system. He's coming to play for his former offensive coordinator and former backup quarterback, Aaron Filo. Will, I know you had some early tweets during the transfer portal window, but how have you seen this class come together and just really the urgency we've spent getting playmakers around the quarterback room and building that roster?
Once again, you know, my tough coaching is really paying off. It's been great, you know. The transfer portal rankings are so finicky because we don't get any credit for retaining Jaden Baugh, who is probably the best running back in the country. We don't get any credit for retaining Dallas Wilson or VB3, who, you know, I don't know how they rank the transfer portal guys, but they would be, you know, surefire top 50 players in the transfer portal. But bringing in Eric Singleton to kind of compliment them, it just seems like such a great upgrade. You know, you kind of check their profiles. We got a big X receiver in Dallas Wilson. We've got the guy that can go inside or out with VB3. And then our slot guy, Eric Singleton, you know, we kind of would have liked that to have been Trey Wilson in a perfect world, just because we, you know, I thought he was productive when he was healthy. But it's like we upgraded the position and got a guy who's actually reliable and who is always available. And the other great thing is that, you know, we have TJ Abrams kind of sitting there in the wings, and we aren't really like settled or satisfied with how the roster looks. It's like, oh, this really, you know, guy who was good enough to declare for the draft, who was a stud at Georgia Tech and who took a bit of a step back because of some terrible quarterback play and Hugh Freeze's golf game over at Auburn, decides he wants to come back and play for Buster Faulkner. And so I think we got legit weapons around Aaron Filo. You know, he doesn't need to be some all-world quarterback. He doesn't have to have all the tools of Josh Allen by any means. You know, he just needs to distribute the ball to the playmakers and work within the system the way that Coach Faulkner wants him to. And so I think if Coach Troutwine, Dr. Phil, can coach up the offensive line, this offense is going to look pretty good.
I think the biggest point, Will, is how they've constructed these additional pieces they've got in the portal. You bring back Jaden Ball, but you go get a guy in Zach Pryor from Cincinnati who's a speedster. I think he ran like a 4.3 coming out of high school. Jaden Ball is obviously the best back in the country, but he doesn't have that breakaway speed. He's going to burst some runs, but he doesn't have that home run game-changing speed. So you bring in a guy like Pryor. Dallas Wilson, stud. We see what he can do, but not the greatest top-end speed. I know he had that big touchdown run against Texas. He had to break a few tackles. Fernell Brown, he's elite. We've seen what he can do, but not probably the top-end speed, in that elite factor. But Eric Singleton, I think, brings that elite speed. I think he finished second in the ACC 100-meter dash while he was at Georgia Tech. So he just – how they complement each other in their roles. And Dev and Will, you guys saw this with how when you guys got Jacoby Myers – in the middle of the season, how everyone kind of found their identity in that offense at the wide receiver position. I think bringing Singleton kind of allows Dallas and Vernell to play more of their natural position while having that home run in Singleton.
Yeah, the aggressiveness and the urgency has been my favorite aspect of the offseason acquisitions. Player retention has been great. You've kept all the top guys that we've talked about before. One of the things that I think is a green flag, if you will, with this new staff is the fact that they have not reached to take, you know, the layups from Tulane. And you know, it's you don't necessarily know how those guys would translate to, you know, the SEC level. But I think that Sumrall has a good idea, a better idea than most. You see, you know, Tennessee took a kid from Tulane. NC State took Harvey, the
eight sack. Yeah, Harvey Dyson, yeah.
From Tulane. So they end up at these second middle tier NC State, you know, ACC. Tennessee, it feels like maybe they reached on the kid with six sacks from Tulane. So you appreciate that Sumrall's trying to fill the roster with more high-quality guys that he thinks are capable of contributing at a school like Florida. And then you look, and it makes you feel even better seeing what the offensive staff have done. You know, Troutwine came from Penn State. He brought a couple Penn State kids over. Buster Faulkner, obviously, from Georgia Tech. He's brought a couple Georgia Tech kids over. So they're not afraid to take guys that they think can play at this level, but they're not going to reach and take guys just for the sake of having the body just for the sake of filling out a roster spot. So that's something that I've liked so far during the portal period. Another thing is this staff has shown not only are they aggressive, not only do they have a sense of urgency, but they're also very confident is the feeling that I get in Aaron Filo. And I say that because they retained Dallas Wilson. They retained Vernell Brown. But they said, you know, we can still go get better. We can still go get Singleton from Auburn. We can still go bring this kid in from Oklahoma State that's visiting tomorrow. With Aaron Filo, they got him committed, and we were content. We haven't had any other quarterbacks come in and visit. They have operated as if the quarterback room is set. And that gives, as a fan, I think as a podcast for us, we've kind of gone back and forth on it. It gives me a little bit of confidence that they think that they got the guy, knowing that they're turning away, you know, whether it's Sam Levitt or Sorsby or anybody else around the country that's been a big name, DJ Lagway, we let him walk. We're operating as if they're very, very confident in what they have at quarterback. And I think, you know, you hired Buster Faulkner to come in and fix the offense. And, you know, his goal, he was already interviewing for G5 head coaching jobs. His goal as the offensive coordinator at the University of Florida is to get a Power Four head coaching job out of this role. So I think that their confidence in Aaron Filo and bringing him over from Georgia Tech, the way that we've handled the quarterback position and the rest of the offense shows their confidence in him. So that's the biggest question mark, I think, going into the offseason is what Aaron Filo is going to look like. But the indication that we've gotten from the staff is that they feel pretty darn good about what they have in that kid.
And I think they really liked what they heard from Tremell Jones in those so-called exit meetings or whatever you want to call it when you bring the new staff and the transfer portal talk. So I think they're pretty confident what they were inheriting in Tremell Jones and how he spoke in that meeting, what they've seen on limited film he's had or some practice clips or whatnot, or if he threw for them. And then Filo. So that's a great point, Dev. Sam, do you got any maybe areas this portal closes in less than 48 hours while we're recording? Maybe another position defensively, that D-tackle spot or anywhere else you think we maybe need to add a piece over these next 48 hours?
Yeah, obviously I think if there would be one thing you can maybe nitpick, it is maybe the defensive line kind of portaling, if you will, but we've got some guys that are already on campus. I know we had some that also did their own portaling, but I know that I forget what his name is. I know he has a cool name, but he's the cornerback from South Florida, had some pretty good stats. I think he's visiting. if you can get someone that late that to come visit, you know, while the portal's kind of, you know, wrapping up here, you know, that means you're pretty sold on them. So if we'll see if there's any more late additions, you know, defensively, like you mentioned, Jackson would have maybe wanted another defensive tackle, some maybe another pass rushing presence there. But overall, I think the portal is a really good class. I think I just looked at On3, we're the number 9 portal class, you know, take that for what you will. But, you know, adding a guy like Eric Singleton, you know, he was a top 5 guy in the portal last year. I'm sure he had some other suitors other than Auburn. Don't know what, you know, led him to make that decision. I'm not going to read too much into his year at Auburn, but having that familiarity with Buster, I think that's going to give him an upper leg on, you know, the young bucks coming back. And especially as a guy who was testing NFL waters and probably could have, you know, he definitely could have gone out if he wanted to, especially with how the receiver game has developed in the NFL. You know, guys are getting drafted second, third round, you know, everyone's looking for a bargain receiver in the league. So I'm really excited to see him. Obviously he's our top guy in the portal, so that's what you expect, but that receiver room is super intriguing. Really interested to see who could develop, you know, outside of those three. But yeah, the weapons are great. And then, I think he might've actually committed after Singleton. Then it's the tight end from Georgia Tech, Luke Harpering. He was actually ranked right behind Amir Jackson when they were high school recruits. So that's 2 top 10 tight ends in that same recruiting class. I believe I saw that graphic. I believe I saw that out there somewhere. So that's, you're elevating the tight end game, which is also very good to see, because we all know what the tight end position has been like at the University of Florida for, it seems like, you know, we had Kyle Pitts, obviously, which was great, but, you know, the McElwain years, like, what was it really, you know, Morrill Stevens and
DeAndre Goolsby.
DeAndre Goolsby, you know, the
Ziontae Lewis.
having some more athletic type tight ends that can really, and, you know, that's another guy, like we've mentioned, a Buster guy who thinks he can play tight end at the SEC level. So really excited to see those guys. And like Devin mentioned, with the whole being sold on Philo, like there's so much craziness going on with quarterbacks in the portal. Like, and to not even want to try to get into any of that is it's refreshing, you know, with the whole Damond Williams situation with Washington, Sam Levitt, I stuck my neck out there for that. I'm going to backtrack on that, because that guy took like 18 visits, got swindled in by Lane, then Lane grabbed 2 more quarterbacks in the portal. It's just been crazy. So to Devin's point, it definitely should intrigue us in a great way and have us excited that they identified Philo, having that relationship with Buster and saying, hey, he can play SEC ball, and having our best players come back to be around him. And then also Singleton coming as well, who has some experience with him. It's really exciting.
Yeah. And to your point about the late portal entries, you know, I think that they would want to add to the line of scrimmage. I think we all need to probably dig deeper into our pockets to try to pull some money together to go grab, you know, maybe not a Jordan Seaton, but somebody out of the portal to help shore up those lines of scrimmage late here in the portal window.
Good point, Dev. I'll make sure to put the QR code at the end of this show. Everyone can donate, and we'll make a generous donation to Florida Victorious to make sure we get one more offensive tackle.
Start at least 2.5, whatever you can do.
One more thing. I know we're wrapping soon, but like, I just want to piggyback, because Jackson mentioned, you know, adding that third piece and having other players find their role. And he equated that to the Jacksonville Jaguars picking up Jakobi Meyers at the deadline, which was a great deal. I was just curious how that ended for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
A lot better than it ended for 9. My heart was broken. 9's fingers were broken.
I mean, we have to talk about it. I mean, we're not. I'm not going to sit here.
I know. We do have to talk about it. We don't have Hunter and Jake here to help defend. It's a good game. It's a good game. Josh Allen's great. He's a reason that, you know, he's great. Trevor was good. Josh Allen was great.
Yeah. Fair enough. Spoken like a true fan.
Well, we're going to wrap up as the transfer portal also comes to a close. Some exciting times ahead. More importantly, the Gators are starting to find their identity and hoops. So hopefully we keep this thing rolling as we head into Memorial Gym Saturday. So we'll see you guys back. We'll have another episode probably dropping Sunday night. Listen for you guys Monday morning. But thanks for listening. Make sure you're subscribed on our YouTube page, Apple, Spotify, and follow us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. And we'll catch you again soon. Go Gators.
Go Gators. Go Gators.